Hi, everyone. Love that's
Talk
listening.
Radio.
Hello to everyone that's listening out there. This is Deborah Cloyd. I'm the author of the newly released Mira book, Harlequin, titled The Summer We Came to Life. And I will be speaking tonight with Clifford Victor Johnson. He's the English theoretical physicist and professor at University of Southern California, USC. Hi, Clifford.
Hi there, Deborah. Do you prefer to be called Deborah?
In this new incarnation as an author, yes, Deborah. But if you want to call me Debbie, that
okay.
would be okay, too. So I thought we could get started. I would just give a little bit about the book so people have a sense of why we're going to have our chat, how our two worlds intersect. The novel is about best friends, and they're dealing with the death of a fourth friend while they're on vacation in Honduras with their kind of multicultural mix of parents. And they share stories of love and loss on three different continents before the story has a twist. It has like a supernatural quantum physics metaphysical twist into parallel universes and some other wild kind of physics theories. And the main characters, the main character is a physics major. She kind of is revisiting a journal that she kept with her friend before she passed away, where they're kind of researching quantum physics to explore different ways to communicate after death. So I was very excited to be put in touch with Clifford. He does a lot of work in superstring theory and particle physics, so kind of a different slant, but I was really excited to hear what he would have to say about my novel, which he has now finished. we're gonna interview each other. So I have some questions for him, and he's gonna fire some back at me. To give you an idea of what he does, he's taught all over USC, Santa Barbara, Princeton University. He won the 2005 Maxwell Medal and Prize, spoken at CERN in Geneva and Korea and all over the world. And if you've seen him, he appears on the History Channel, the series that they have, The Universe, and also the consultant, I believe, for the Discovery Channel. So you're basically my idol, Clifford, and I'm thrilled to hear what you have to say. So anything you want to add to that? Did I do a fair description of you?
Thank you very much for the generous introduction. I work on various aspects of physics, which I think have a lot of contact with some of the ideas that you were exploring in your book. And so it was a very interesting read in terms of seeing how someone actions and introduces that into the context of literary fiction. So it was a real pleasure to see that. It doesn't happen as often as I would like, and so it was a pleasure to hear from you and to get to meet you to find out what was going on behind the scenes to get you to do that. So this is a great opportunity for me as well.
Wow, thank you. thank you. Okay, well, that's good. Actually, that's a really good place to start, because my first kind of thing I wanted to ask you about is why do you think, because I think we both view it the same, that popular culture has kind of become divorced from a lot of the newest discoveries in modern science, especially quantum physics. People seem to be intimidated by it. They seem to be, to think it's, I actually don't know. I guess I'm asking you, why do you think that happens? And do you think it's changing now that we have some new shows like Lost and Fringe and some of these kind of theories? But I still find it to be very kind of a disconnect. Is that what you would say?
It's a really big issue, as you might imagine, which, I'm not sure we're going to cover all the points here. And I don't think there's any one thing that has got us to where we are in terms of how popular culture seems to have some kind of aversion to a lot of things that are labeled as technical or nerdy or what have you. And science seems to be at the top of that list. So I think a lot of it goes back to how things are done in schools, for example, which I think needs to be addressed, but that's going to be a long, hard road. And somehow I think very early on we over specialize and we encourage our kids, I think, in the culture to believe that you're only good at certain kinds of things which are kind of polar opposites. And so, you know, you have the jocks and the nerds or what have you. You have the kids who are, you know, supposed to be really, really good at, say, art. And if they're really good at art, that means they can't be really good at science at the same time. And you know, there's this belief that you know, there are these things that can be excelled at, but they must be done at the expense of other things. And so it ends up with this sort of polarization of the kinds of people that we produce, even the really, really good people in terms of doing really, really well at school or college or what have you, you know, the people we consider to be the real scholars, even today, we find that they get really over-specialized. And so science becomes this sort of special area over in the corner that you either like passionately or you run screaming from, and there's no middle ground. And I think that's crazy. So
I think that's very interesting, and I think you're right. I think that has a lot to do with it. But I also think that, you know, I obviously love physics. I'm fascinated by these big ideas of physics and these kind of concepts. But that's not the physics that I remember in high school. I mean, the physics that I learned in high school was very kind of classical, Newtonian. They didn't really get into any of that kind of sci-fi implication, any of it, you know. And I really think that's part of it, too, is that they're not really enticing kids into what some of this stuff could mean on a bigger level. You think that's part of it, too?
That may be part of it, but I actually think that we have to give credit to a lot of hardworking teachers who just don't get to, you know, aren't allowed to get to that point where they can really unpack the fun stuff,
right,
or at least the stuff that seems more fun than the other stuff. And I think if teachers are competing with so many other things in the classroom and outside of the classroom that they can't even get through the basics, and, you know, you do need the basics in order to really appreciate the other stuff.
Right. Right.
I think that is a problem. So they are competing also with the culture itself, which says that Newton's laws aren't interesting because it's, you know, it's this stuff from centuries ago and it's not as cool and fun as computers. But, you know, if only they had a little bit more room and time and resources to show what you can do just with Newton's laws, right? We put people on the moon with Newton's laws of physics. You know,
right.
Have you involved? Stuff is everywhere, and it's not so easy to point at one thing and say that that's the problem.
Right. No, I have the deepest respect and sympathy for teachers. I am a teacher. My mom was a school teacher for 35 years, so certainly I know what they're up against. But I can't help but kind of wishing. But this is another way that we can go about it, right? I mean, me and you have similar goals in kind of reaching a broader audience, and there's other ways to do it. And the arts, like you said, is a really good way to go about it. Clifford, I will tell you, everyone, that he is an artist as well, and he spent the last few years really brushing up and kind of reteaching yourself to draw and to work on a project that I'm sure we will talk about. And I think you're right. I think people do need to kind of branch out and have different interests because you find these really cool ways that they fit together and that they encourage each other. So So I can pretend to be art. Okay, so I'm going to ask you another question. Because you kind of already hinted at it, as you can tell, that you really stand out among your colleagues for trying to do this, for trying to bring science to the masses, especially on the TV work that you do, on your blog that you have. Can you say the blog? I don't have it right in front of me.
Oh, Asymptosia?
Yeah.
The blog?
Yeah, if you do.
Which no one knows how to pronounce the spell.
Yeah, I wasn't about to tongue drip over it. I thought you could do that for me. Well, maybe we can say that at the end. I can say my website and you can say yours. But he has a blog where he kind of talks about everyday life combined with these very complicated theories, and it's fascinating. So you really do this a lot, where you try to bring it to the masses. And I'm just always kind of curious, what do you think when you see a book like mine that, you know, kind of dilute some of these theories and then puts it into a pop culture? I mean, obviously the thing that I suggest in the book is theoretically, as far as physics goes, it's impossible. So do you find this amusing, or do you find it, I don't know, insulting in a way, or is it fun for you?
Well, I think it's actually very important. Let me take a step back, though, and say one thing, which is you're very kind to call me an artist. I wouldn't presume to call myself that. I dabble in lots of things, and I dabble in aspects of interests. Some work which a graphic argument that I hope is interesting and enjoyable. So thanks for mentioning that. The whole point of that and the sorts of things that you're doing is precisely the sort of supplement that I think we need in society. We can't just tell the teachers to teach better. I mean, we should, of course. Not all teachers are great and not all teachers are bad. But we can't just sit and hope that the school system is going to just change magically overnight and everyone's going to be amazing and you know, artists and scientists, everybody's a polymath.
Clifford, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second because I'm having trouble hearing you. I'm worried that it's your connection. Can you...
being addressed. Clifford. Can you hear me now?
Clifford, can you hear me?
But you can't hear me.
Yeah, Clifford, I'm having a tough time hearing you. Are you? Do you think it's a connection issue? Should we try and call back?
Hey guys, Clifford.
Yeah.
Are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm using Skype.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a connection issue, so maybe let's have you guys
both call back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or just Clifford,
okay.
If you want to call
you
back.
Yeah,
if you want to call back.
And we don't have
from
Julia,
the,
we don't have to start over, right?
No. I have a music playing. Yeah.
Okay.
You're fine.
Okay. Okay, I'll try calling back to you just in case it's something with mine.
No, it's not you. It's not you.
No? Okay.
No. Just stay and have him call back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if you could hear that on that end.
Yeah, I was about to get on and say something. All right.
At the top of the stairs.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Much better.
Yes.
All right. Continue.
Okay, so shall I just pick it up with the answer, or do you want to redo the question?
I can restate. So, yeah, so we were just having a little issue with connection problems, but I was asking Clifford how he felt about what my novel does and what other, you know, kind of art are doing, that they're trying to kind of weave in these very diluted physics into art. Art is such a lofty word, but you know what I'm saying. And I wondered if you found that, you know, kind of insulting or amusing. And then you were telling us about your work and some other things that you saw. Right?
That's right. Okay, so I'll start again. What I was saying earlier about schools feeds into this, because I don't think that we can expect to just magically have all the teachers teach at their best ability and the schools be perfect and everything, and everyone suddenly be interested in science without changing the rest of the culture that all of that connects to. And so this is where I think the kinds of things that you're doing, the kinds of things that I'm doing, and many other people around, both scientists and non-scientists, trying to do science back into the general culture. And the general culture is, you know, everything else. It's all the stuff we talk about over dinner or around the water cooler and things like that, which are things to do with arts and the game and, you know, politics and all those things. I want to put science back in those conversations as well. And I think you do. By writing the book that you wrote. And so I think that what you did is great, because you're trying to get people interested, not just in a wonderful narrative concerning some very interesting characters and locations and what have you, the traditional fare of your standard, you know, sort of literary enterprise, but you're also using science as a vehicle to help with that narrative. And it becomes a talking point as well. So it's not that, you know, a bunch of sort of people going to night school to learn some science, which is a great thing, and it's not like it's sort of like, sort of spinach writing, where you're sticking stuff in there because it's good for them. You're putting it in there because it's interesting, it's integral to what you're doing, and the people reading it will think so, and they'll be talking about science without even realizing they're talking about science. So it's back in the culture in a great way. And I think it helps erase those barriers to people liking science, getting their kids interested in science, and themselves getting interested in science, without it being this thing stuck over in the corner on its own. So that's what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. I do think that. I think that I wanted to make it interesting. I want to have more dialogues like what we're doing now, to have people kind of wanting to discuss these different ideas and try to think about how they apply to our everyday lives, to our water cooler talk and the thing, you know, the other things we talk about. But I will also say that it was deeper for me also in the book, in that I've had this kind of lifelong interest in quantum physics and the really cool, you know, like you said, kind of wild ideas, the fun stuff, I think you said. But what happened, another thing that happened is I've had two near-death experiences, two drowning experiences, one similar to the book in El Salvador, in a whitewater rafting. And after that, it was a really big wake-up call for me. I was kind of a wild child, kind of a, you know, daredevil, and I started kind of thinking about all those big questions that I think, you know, near-death experience or not, I think all of us kind of are going to cross at some point, afterlife and losing loved ones and the kind of big spiritual questions. And so the book was that too, kind of challenging physics to say, you know, I know science and religion is kind of the age-old battle, but just to say, well, what can these theories, what can they tell us about death and dying and spirituality? And I just was curious. I know that's a big question, but if you had anything to say about that, if you thought science, if this was an appropriate realm for quantum physics.
So my own view is that these are almost by definition some of the questions that science addresses are, I was going to say orthogonal, Well, they're sort of in a different realm from a lot of the kinds of questions that things of a more religious nature are designed to address. And so my own view is that and they have a difference, are very near each other in the spheres of human experience, and so they tend to end up being in conflict when people start asking things of them that they weren't really designed to do. By them, I'm talking about science and religion. So my own way of doing things is that there's this frontier of knowledge that we have that's testable and reproducible, and we can sort of interrogate that knowledge and build on it, and that is the thing that we call science, and that frontier expands, and sometimes it goes it expands into areas that were previously only the realm of religion, and so be it. We learn more. We shouldn't be afraid to learn things. And so we learn things. Mm-hmm. We find that there are simpler explanations sometimes for things that no longer require the supernatural, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this, I think everyone agrees that, okay, more or less everyone agrees that that's sort of the process that works. Where I think people disagree then is where that process will end. So some people think that eventually you will squeeze religion into this corner and just expand, and then it's all gone and everything is science. And I think that's naive. I don't think that's the purpose of science, for a start. And I don't think that is even possible for science to do. What I think science is always going to be this expanding realm of inquiry and discourse that we have to build up how we fit in the world and how we do things in the world in terms of sort of physical, the physical things we do. And I suspect that there will always be things that we can't immediately answer. We either can't answer them yet and we'll answer them later, or we will never be able to answer them. I don't know. But I'm fairly sure that that means that there will always be room for people to have religious interpretations of those things. Now, whether those interpretations are right or wrong is a thorny issue, and I'm not going to make some great pronouncement. But what I do know is that there will always be those questions. So if you're a religious person, you will fill the answers in with your own internal spiritual and religious beliefs, and if you're not, you'll find some other way of finding comfort with those answers or those lack of answers. But I don't think that there will ever be any kind of inquiry, whether it be science or otherwise, that will have all the answers to all the questions. So I don't know whether that's completely not answering
the
question.
No, that's very helpful.
But,
yeah. The only thing I think I would say, and I'm in agreement with you when I say it, is just that I think what I find fascinating is that both science and religion, they're ending up asking some of the same questions, which I wouldn't have expected before. So, for instance, you start off by saying, what's the true nature of time and space, and how did the world begin, and what is the meaning of life, and then you realize that you're asking a lot of the same questions that, religion tries to answer. So they are kind of on a similar path, just in two different two different ways. And then I would also say that physics does look for some pretty big answers, though, right? I mean, the things that they're searching for, they would kind of have some definitive answers either way. Obviously, religion is something I'm not willing to take on or you know, discount either. People are going to have their faith and their different interpretations. But physics is trying to ask some pretty spiritual nature, you know, the Higgs field, which we've kind of talked about, it's just very briefly touched on in the book. These are the nature of matter and life and time and even they end up saying some of the same answers too, because religion will, you know, Kabbalah doesn't religion, they will say that it is beyond the realm of human understanding, right? Even Jewish religion, they will say God is what he is in a sense, is he is something that we cannot capable, he's the sum total of what we are incapable of comprehending, and that is how physics strikes me most of the time. You know, 11 dimensions and holographic principle and these things that really are not possible for us to envision, they kind of strike me in a very similar way, that they're pointing to this rich world that exists beyond our immediate senses and comprehension. And that's kind of what the book was playing.
Could I comment on that? Because I,
of course.
I actually disagree on a couple of points, which is sort of interesting, and maybe this is what it comes down to in terms of what we think science is and what religion is. And at the core, I think there are there's several things I want to comment on. So the first is that asking. Asking a question at a given time in human history and knowledge, really to understand whether that question is religious or scientific, oftentimes we need to know the context. And so there was a time at which asking the question about what is the nature of space and time and whether the universe has an origin, that may have seemed like a religious question, but now we know that it's actually an extremely physical question. We can actually do measurements about the nature of space and time. We have very good ideas about how space and time are related and how they can change in certain situations, which would have seemed like crazy nonsense, a little over a century ago. The idea that the universe has a definite beginning and was born in a way that we can actually write down with remarkable accuracy what the components of the universe were as a result of that birth and how they evolved over time, 13.7 billion years later, give us the universe that we observe today. That, you know, that's all science. And very, very concrete science, which again, 100 or 150 years ago, would have seemed like it was asking very religious questions. So I think we need to reassess what we think are science questions versus religious questions as we move along.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that something that is quite different between science and religion is when you start trying to ask how the process works. And for me, the process of science is what I find very attractive, because it starts out not necessarily being one of a sort of dogmatic approach, but you build up things through inference and through reason. And essentially, science has this beautiful feature of it, which is that it is accessible to everyone, because everyone should be able to reproduce the same results by experiment or what have you, or by inference, and everyone can go through that same questioning process. And so what you end up doing is you build up a series of descriptions and explanations of a universe which are reproducible and which allow you to make predictions about how things should happen later on. And you should be able to explain things in terms of other things. And so that's an element of science, that's an element of the scientific endeavor that ends up giving you a certain kind of robustness, which I think a lot of people find very attractive. What it doesn't necessarily do is tell you how to think about it in terms of meaning. You take your own meaning.
So
let me just finish the point, because I'm sorry it's a long point, but I think it's kind of crucial. Can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. And what you build up with all of that is this wonderful framework on which you can then overlay meaning, which different individuals will overlay given their own internal experience. And I think that's the beginning of religion. It's when you start asking the meaning questions. What does it mean to you that there are a certain number of planets going around the sun at certain distances and what have you? Science will tell you how they relate to each other in terms of the measurements you can do and where they will be tomorrow and what have you. But in terms of some sort of what it means to you on a personal level and how it, you know, how it affects your life and the kind of beauty you find in it or not, that's the beginning of something that lies outside the realm of science, and that's great. And that's, I think, where religion begins, at least for now.
Right. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I just realized as you were speaking where I kind of, I think, misspoke or led you down that path, because I think I believe very similar to what you're saying. I think the word that I used is incomprehension, and you're right, that's exactly the opposite point, is that now physics has these, you know, very testable mathematics, very hard theorems that have been proven about, you know, the beginning of the universe and so forth, but it's the conceptualization that is similar to me to a kind of spirituality. Because if you try to fathom what these theories are really saying, that's where it's similar in a sense to the kind of leap of faith that you would take. I'm not a very religious person, but I find contemplating both of them to be similar to me. But I'm also not a physicist, so I read a lot of the layman's explanations, and I'm probably missing out on a lot of the experience of reading just the mathematical proofs and so forth, and reading the journals and be able to understand them fully. But it's kind of like the ideas, yes, we can say this is the in theory and string theory and these ideas, we can understand them, but the implications for what they mean for me as an individual human being in the span of all these, you know, billions of years, is still kind of not within that realm. So, you know what I'm saying? I think I'm saying the same thing as you.
I understand. Let me say two things. One is a point of fact, which is that things to do with string theory and M theory and multiple dimensions and stuff like that are still ideas that are waiting to find their tests. So we do not know whether they're correct
right.
yet. They're wonderful things
right.
that colleagues of mine and myself talk about and even write about in the popular literature. But I think if we're all writing carefully, you should see that we say we don't know whether it's true or not yet. So those are the
disclaimer.
Those are the beyond.
It's
important. It's important because people hear about these things a lot in the press, and oftentimes the press forget to mention, as many times as they mention these things, that these things are still being worked out. So I just want to say
right.
that. But I think we should probably move on, but let me just say I think it's fine for you to put things in your own words as you have, about how these things seem and sound to you. And I would say it's great that you have a sense of how marvelous these things are and how huge these issues are, even before you get to multiple dimensions, what have you, if we just consider how big we know the universe is and all of the amazing things that are going on in the universe that we know a lot about, that's just amazing. If you look at what's going on even in, say, just a flower that you pick out in on the lawn and you dig down into that using the things we've learned about science in the last 100 years, that's an amazing thing too, just in that little flower. Now, I think the thing you're getting at is the sense of wonder. I think the sense of wonder is a very important word. Wonder is a very important word. And that sense of wonder is simply, I think, the key thing that you're feeling there. And the point is that religion does not have a monopoly on the sense of awe and wonder about life. Science has that too. So it's okay when you hear about these things and you feel, my goodness, this is just awesome, you know, in the good old-fashioned sense of the word. It's okay to say that. It's okay to feel that. And it's almost akin to a religious feeling, because that's usually where that feeling is broadcast as being coming from. But you can be awed about stuff in science as well and not have a religious bone in your body. So let's move on. But I'm just saying that whether it be science or religion, who cares where it comes from? A sense of awe, a sense of wonder about the world we live in is what we should all be striving for, however we get there.
Very, very beautifully put. And yes, and that is what we are both hoping, is that people will kind of get a little, you know, taste of these things when we put them out there in this way. And then they'll want to learn more, because then that way they can experience exactly what you're saying, this kind of awesome, power, awestruck. Wonder, as you say, when you learn more. So yes, I hope people will do that. But yeah, you're right. Let's move on. So, because we can talk about specifics, because in the book, what I did is I would love to hear your take on it. Is I combined two theories, right? So I combined the Copenhagen theory and the mini universes theory, which are two mutually exclusive ways of dealing with kind of the power of consciousness and it's always difficult to wonder how much detail to go into, but what did you think about that? Because it's impossible, obviously. That's when you move into the realm of fiction and science fiction. But they were based on real theories, so maybe you could talk about that.
Well, so first of all, I think it's admirable that you really dug into these things and then sort of layered them into the work that you were doing in order to move the narrative in the ways you wanted to move it and to bring in the depth that you wanted. And so my own feeling is that, you know, if I were to sit down with a pen and paper and start digging through all of what you did with that material and try to, you know, give grade it like a term paper in physics, for a start, I think that would just be missing the point of what you were doing. So I didn't do that. So I think that what you did is you brought in two things that you knowingly knew were not necessarily happy bedfellows. I'm talking about, you know, Many Worlds and Copenhagen, etc. And you use them together as much as you could. And in some ways, the fact that they do sort of rub against each other in an unpleasant way in terms of sort of how they fit together from a physicist perspective, actually, at least from my perspective, added some interesting tension to what you were doing. So I just don't think you were not writing a physics book. So I don't think you were necessarily bound by the laws of you know, getting all your equations right or anything like that, that you know, I would have to be if I were writing a text. So I know it sounds like I'm being evasive, but what I'm saying is I don't mind that you had these things together in the same framework, partly because I think you actually, now I think about it, you did a good job when you moved between the different interpretations. In some ways, you changed your universe in just the right way to make them consistent in what you were doing. So I could go into some depth babbling about how these different ways of interpreting quantum mechanics works, but I probably shouldn't. But very briefly, let me say in either Many Worlds or Copenhagen, you really are only ever talking about, well, it depends upon who you talk to, but you really are only ever talking about one universe. And what you do at some point is you have your characters go outside what we would consider to be this universe, and then you're sort of doing the Many Worlds thing. But you're in some ways allowing them to then treat their universe as the real universe and the universe where all the other people are alive as one of these sort of Many Worlds auxiliary universes. And then in that universe, you're using their consciousness to collapse the wave function and things like that. So what I'm saying is I think you were sort of moving back and forth between the different interpretations, but at the same time, you were changing the nature of your universe in a way that made it kind of all fit together in a way that worked well enough for the novel. So I don't know if that's comprehensible at all, but I'm going to leave it there.
That will do. That will certainly do. And thank you. I like that explanation. Okay, so I mean, I could ask you questions, to be honest, forever. So it's just such a thrill to talk with such an expert. But I think we'll probably, you know, not want this to go on all night. So I was going to ask if you had any questions for me. I know you have your own aspirations in literature. We're going to see a graphic novel come out from you pretty soon in the future, I hope. But was there anything that you wanted to ask me about after reading the book?
Yeah, I have a few things, and it's I think some of the things I asked you will probably kind of help illuminate the answers I just gave when you were asking me about elements of the book and what I thought. I'm answering those because I'm coming from maybe a certain perspective about what it is I think you were trying to do. And so you'll probably see that in some of my questions. So, but let me take a step back though and ask a little bit about the process, just out of curiosity. So first of all, you know, what motivated you to use, you know, any science at all in your fiction? And then sort of drilling down a bit, what made you pick these particular topics? And I'm also curious, did you have more in there that had to get sort of chopped out due to, you know, editing and all that good stuff?
Okay, so incorporating the science is mainly, I mean, just as you can tell, I'm fascinated by it, and it's just been a passion. But I was dealing with some kind of heavy stuff, so I was thinking about how to deal with grief and with loss and grieving. And to be honest, the first draft didn't have the physics per se. I was just thinking about these best friends. I was thinking about the scenario. I was thinking about, but I kept thinking about it on my own. And then that's when I came up with the kind of twist that I guess we shouldn't give away too much, but that's when I came up with this very more supernatural kind of twist, and then I just ran with it. So the draft that I turned in to my editor had a lot more physics in it. I mean, it was just much more detailed. The chapters were much more separated out. It was much more like a journal, like full journal entries. So they went into more detail and different other theories beyond those two, more history, a lot more. And the general consensus from both my agent and my publisher were like, whoa, you know, this is not, we don't even know what to do with this. It's not, we like it. We like the, you know, the general kind of twist, but it's too detailed and you're not going to connect with a mainstream audience. And they actually considered taking it all, they suggested taking it all out and just making it a very kind of vague spiritual thing. And that's where I had to stick to my guns and just say, no way. Like, that's, it's my, yeah, it's my favorite part. It's for me the heart of the novel. It's the whole point. And it's something that I care about, which is reconnecting everything we've been talking about, reconnecting modern science to pop culture so that people care about what people are dedicating their lives to and what they're finding out about all these exciting theories, because they really are looking at things like this, parallel universes and power of consciousness and things that are really exciting and really can, you know, apply to our lives. So I made him keep it in. But I did, and I will say this, because I think you were kind of asking me before, too, about, you know, incorporating it into mainstream and how to make it interesting. And I did work really hard. I went back after that first draft, and I tried to make it more connected emotionally, because that's what you're working with in fiction. You're dealing with characters, and people care about characters. People watch TV shows for characters. They read books for characters. They like the ideas. They like the wonder. But what they really care about are your people that come alive. So I really worked to try and connect it more.
Great. I guess one of the things that's interesting, and that, you know, I always have, well, not just me, but I think we all have some difficulty with, is whether or not we should worry about everything being, you know, absolutely correct and what have you. And my feeling is that the best we can do is sort of an appetizer, a taster that will then invite people to find out more. So you brought out some of these ideas about parallel universes and things like that. And, whether or not we as scientists think those other universes are real or not, whether they're artifices that allow us to calculate correct answers in various theories and things like that, is an issue that you're not going to be able to uncover in your book. But what you hope is that people will, because you brought those things to the novel, people will go, hey, I want to find out more about that. And then they'll go and read some more, and they'll find out more detail, and they'll find out, oh, okay. And so that's my hope. This is why I stay interested in this kind of thing. And it's not for everybody. I think the vast majority of my colleagues, maybe more sensibly than me, would just, you know, say, well, no, let's not do this. This is just going to confuse people. And I think that we run a risk then that we lock ourselves in our ivory towers and say, well, you can't talk about this stuff unless you get it absolutely right. And then we wonder why people don't understand what we're doing and basically don't want to send us any funding or anything like that. And that's because we locked ourselves away. So I think we do need to have this discussion where people such as yourselves can bring a necessarily incomplete a piece of what's going on out as a sort of taster for people to find out more if they want to. So I just want to congratulate you and say well done for fighting with your people to get that little bit of a taster out there. And there are such great sort of books out there that people can now go on to read, having gotten a little bit of a thirst for what you brought out. So anyway, that's just me babbling. Let me move on to another another question that I had in mind. And let's see. I'm curious to know, given what I just said, and nevertheless, let me ask the following question, because I know that you do have a very deep and personal connection to some of the core events in the novel. And you had this need to bring out some of it in these, in terms of some of the scientific ideas that are dear to you. So one of my questions is, how much do you actually believe in the scientific connections underlying the sorts of things that you were talking about to do with the afterlife, et cetera? And I ask this knowing that that it's difficult to discuss issues of truth and belief with people who are writing a kind of fiction that is in some ways extremely layered and perspective dependent. So anyway, with that, let me shut up and hear your answer.
That is a big question. Can we go back to religion? that's a tricky question. Yeah, I've said all along, yes, I have these experiences, these near-death experiences that I don't know if you've ever had anything similar, but they really shake you, and you have to think about kind of a big, most of the time we don't really have to face it. We don't have to really think about what happens after, what would happen if I was gone, to the people I left behind and to me, and consciousness and the soul and all these kind of spiritual questions. But I will say that I believe in one of the tenets of the book, which is the power of consciousness. And that's kind of a tricky thing because it's been all these popular culture books that have taken, kind of like you were saying before, very cold hard truths, or not truths, but theorems in quantum physics, and they've kind of elaborated into that. But I do believe in that. I do believe that we're dealing with energy, we're dealing with vibrations, we're dealing with, without trying to sound too much like a hippie or something, that we are, that this is science, in the realm of science, and it can be explained, maybe not yet, maybe one day we will understand, but I do believe power of consciousness. I'm getting away from your answer because there's two things in the book, so I'm trying to decide how to address them. So power of consciousness just means that we have control over our own destiny. Now, not necessarily to the extent that the characters in the books take it, that we can, bring ourselves back in that sense, but power of consciousness that we are affecting our lives by our thought processes and by what we place our minds on, we place our focus on. I do believe that, and I believe it, if nothing else, just because I have really seen it consistently happen in my life. It was another reason, besides the dealing with the big questions of death and afterlife, it was important to me to put that aspect into the novel, because it's just something that I think is interesting, and I think I have seen it time and time again. Most of my family and stuff, they just think I'm incredibly coincidentally lucky a lot of times. I go to Spain with no place to stay, and someone offers me a room. I go, just these constant kind of things that come to me. But I believe that. And then when I read about these quantum physics theories the first time, I went, wow, that's just really incredible to think about. So in that sense, I do believe in that portion of the book. Now, in terms of parallel universes, and that's a little outside of what I would use the word believe attached to. Am I fascinated by it? Are there times where I go, okay, that could be possible? Yes, but I don't know necessarily in the way that it's in the book. It's more just, like you said, it's a dialogue that I want people to have. It's something that I want them to think about, to explore, to learn more about. And it's just kind of fun, It just makes us think about what happens, what's out there, what comes next. How's that?
Well, I think that's great. If you don't mind me sort of supplementing what you're saying with, given that I asked you, I guess it's only fair that I answer the question with my own view as well, very briefly, that, first of all, yes, I think, of course, I believe in the power of consciousness because, otherwise what would be the point? We'd be drifting along aimlessly, not in control of our own destiny, and that seems a little bit pointless to me. So I believe in the power of consciousness. I just don't happen in the sense that I think we take charge of our lives. It's one of the most important things we need to do as responsible human beings is take charge of our lives, take charge of the lives of others that, in as much as we connect to those others' lives, make a difference in people's lives and our lives. And this all comes from having a clear view of how you go about doing that and being conscious of it. So that in that sense, which maybe maybe sort of seemingly boring and concrete, I think the power of consciousness is alive and well, and very important. I, of course, worry a lot when people, and I don't mean you, because you were doing it in the context of fiction, and, you know, your book has fiction written all over it. It, you know, it's a novel. What I worry about is when people, of course, hijack things from science. They sort of cherry pick some bits of science here and there that they like, and they leave all the rest of it alone, the bits that they don't like or they don't understand, and they cherry pick, and then they write a book that purports to be factual about how, you know, your consciousness can change things because quantum mechanics says that quantum physics can do that and stuff like that. That's where I have a real problem, because then those people are really just snake oil salesmen, and it's just a new modern version of snake oil. That's not what you're doing here. You have your own belief in the power of consciousness that has a personal meaning for you, which I respect. It may be a different way in which I think of the power of consciousness, and that's fine. That's what makes us individuals. And then you're using, in my opinion anyway, you're using as a powerful, very direct metaphor some of the things that you see in modern science useful narrative devices to help move forward this powerful feeling you have about how people move forward in their lives. And so I think that's a great process, and that's a great thing to do. And it's not like literature doesn't do that in other realms. I mean, you know, we all know about things like wonderful writings of authors in the tradition of magical realism and things like that, where they are using as narrative devices there things that they don't necessarily think happened in exactly that way down to the last detail, but the important sense of what they're trying to get, the sort of important truth of what they're trying to get in terms of those characters' lives, is communicated by that thing. It doesn't mean that that thing exactly happened in that way. And I think kind of that's what you're doing here. I mean, and you don't need to agree with me on this, because I think that's another powerful thing about good writing. You don't have to agree with the author. The author creates this thing, and then it's out there for others to do with it. Well, if it's good enough, it will have ways that people will slice it that won't necessarily be the same way that the author intended. And in fact, it's wonderful if it isn't, because it then makes it greater than just that, you know, a very simple thing. So I think what you've done is part of a great tradition, and you've happened to use some things from science to do that, and you've got people thinking and talking. Okay, so sorry to again babble on, but I just wanted to.
Eloquent, far more eloquent than my explanation. I may borrow that. But thank you. I like that when you say that.
Well, thank you. And I liked what you said as well. I didn't intend to replace it, just sort of supplement. Okay, let me finish up with a couple of other things I wanted to ask about, again, to do with just the, you know, where this all fits. And, you know, a lot of people are going to go, well, this is, you know, this kind of has to fit into their view of what particular genre they want it to be sitting in. Is it science? Is it science fiction? Is it women's fiction or chick lit or all of these things? Because they'll see elements of all of those. And one of the things that excites me about what you've done, and I think what I'm doing as well, is that it isn't so easily classifiable. It has elements of lots of different things. And we should all be resistant to being stuck into little boxes. That said, I'm curious to know what of those various genres that people have tried to push your book into, what aspects of those are you sort of proud to be associated with as an element of your, you know, of your book?
Wow. We are really covering some tricky territory. I think it's fascinating that I get asked this question by so many different in the interviews and stuff that I've done. Genre is just something that always comes up about my book, and I think maybe it's because, like you said, we're both working on stuff that kind of crosses over different genres, and that makes people kind of nervous and kind of curious. For me,
yeah.
I've found that it has been a way to kind of illuminate, and I'm not necessarily saying this to you, I just, in general, stereotypes and biases and you know, cultural kind of taboos and certain and bias that we see. And I don't know. I think it's really amazing. For instance, so you said, which ones would I not want to be associated with? So if a guy says, you know, if I'm explaining my book to a male, whatever, my age kind of guy, and he says, oh, so it's chick lit, I take offense because I know what he means by that. He's dismissing it as something that is not something that he would necessarily relate to, be interested in. Right. So, but then there's an entire culture of women that love the genre that they call chick lit. And if they write to me and they say, oh, I love your book, I love chick lit, I love that, you know, you did, what they mean, I know what they mean is that it's dealing with relationships, that it's kind of looking at a certain positivity towards life, an emphasis on best friends and on love. I know what they mean, and I would not take offense to that. Then I know if, you know, my boyfriend goes off and is trying to describe it to his buddies as sci-fi, I know that he's trying to give me a compliment, you know. So it's really been absolutely just interesting and fascinating to watch this whole thing play out. I don't know what else more to say beyond that. I'm kind of still watching it unfold. I know that, for instance, my publisher, Harlequin, they do a lot of genre romance and other genres, and so they call me literary, okay? But certainly if you talk to Random House or you talk to somebody else, they're probably going to call me, you know, who knows? And then you get into this thing, which is what I usually call my writing, which is women's fiction, and that's where it really gets tricky. Because then you're dealing with kind of social theory and ideas of marginalization and minority and the idea of the other, which women is a position that we still occupy. So, for instance, because this, my book is from a woman's perspective of a certain age, I think you said that, that it becomes women's fiction. But then you have to ask yourself, what would men's fiction be, right? Exactly, right. And then it gets tricky, of course, with racial issues. You know, African-American literature is another category that people have a problem with because you obviously don't see, you know, white male literature section in the bookstore. And it gets tricky because then you're basically advocating literary fiction as a privileged point of view. So if I had written this book as a male coming-of-age story, that somehow bumps it into a more literary category than women's fiction or chick lit. It gets really tricky really fast. So I've worked in the photography industry for 10 years. So I work around all men, and I'm very used to kind of, you know, getting my haunches up and protecting myself and still being one of the guys. But I didn't know that I was going to encounter it necessarily in this arena. So I have found this whole business of classification and genre just amazing. So I think you are going to run into a lot of this in your writing too, in a different sense. But still, you know, still genre is just it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think I'm going to run into it really hard too. You know, just immediately when I try and explain what it is I'm trying to do, and I mean, part of the problem is that we have this bizarre situation where the graphic novel, which itself is already a misnomer because it needn't be a novel, but anyway, moving on. Sort of sequential narrative art, if you want to be pretentious about it and more descriptive. Is this amazing, you know, over 100-year-old form that, you know, America spent a lot of time contributing to and perfecting to, but it's by no means just an American form, but it is an amazing form that was perfected in America in some aspect. And still, people, you know, the typical person you talk to doesn't really get what it is. They either think it's something to do with kids, you know, it's cartoons for kids, or it's like the Sunday funnies, or it's, you know, where are the guys in capes and masks, or what have you. And then on the other hand, so I'm working in that area. I'm using this as a form to invite people into conversations about science and things like that, which I think is a fun thing to do, and hasn't really been done that much, if at all. On the other hand, I also have to say, well, it's actually about science. The real hero, if you like, is just science, the wonder about science and conversations about science. So people go, it's a science book. And then, you know, science books have their own problems in terms of being in that other part of the bookstore where only a certain person is predisposed to talk about science, to read about science, goes to that part of the bookstore. You know, someone like yourself, you know, who knows how to seek out those, that sort of part of the store, because it's a special interest group that's sort of hidden away. And somehow I'm going to put these two things together. And so imagine the nightmare when I even try and get a publisher or an agent interested in getting this thing, you know, between two pieces of cardboard and on bookshelves. Imagine the difficulty I'm going to have just getting it, you know, not hiding in one or other part of the store. And so one of the things I'm anticipating is my own genre battles based on people's predispositions to assume what a science book can be and what an audience for a science book is, and what a graphic novel can be, and what a graphic novel's audience should be. So I have a lot of sympathy with what you are dealing with yourself, and it's one of the reasons I asked the question. So my last question is, are you going to do more of this? More science?
It's so funny to ask that, because originally, you know, I got a two-book deal with Mira, which was amazing, and we had been talking sequel. So obviously the sequel was going to pick up and continue, and it got really, really into parallel universes, and I was researching all this stuff about dreaming and parallel universes, an idea that Brian Greene touched on, and all this kind of really far out stuff. And they decided a genre marketing decision, they decided not to go with a sequel. So I'm working on something new now, and my editor even made kind of an offhand comment. I love my editor, by the way. She's fantastic. But she did make a comment kind of like, okay, no physics this time. So the one I'm working on now is
put into biology.
Sorry, put into biology, right? Well, this one is kind of staying with my – I love to kind of tie historical events. So I have it's a nonlinear love story. It's set against the political violence in Kenya in 2007. And there is going to be a mystical element to it, but I'm not going to have the science underpinnings at this time. That being said, yes, I cannot wait until there will be another avenue in which I can incorporate this stuff. I mean, there's so many other, you know, interesting things that physics is studying right now that I love reading about, I love following about it, and I think they're just perfect for that's what I love to think about, is how to fit those kind of big ideas into an emotional context, into a story. So certainly in the future you'll see more of it. I've got some movie scripts, I'm thinking of writing a script for fun after this, but right now I just got novel 2 coming up, so
great. And then there's your graphic novel down the line somewhere.
Yeah, right. I will leave the graphic novels to you. Yeah, I should have explained that more, probably. We should introduce it. But yeah, Clifford's working on a graphic novel. What? Don't tell.
It's fine. I think you did mention it a number of times, and so did I, and that's
all right. We'll leave it at that. But I'm looking forward to it. You haven't seen it, people, but I've seen it, and it's fascinating. So I look forward to it. But yeah, no graphic novels for me. I'm gonna stick with the stories, the fiction. All right. Wow, that was wonderful. Thank you so much for speaking with me. I hope we get to talk more in the future, and I wish you all the best of luck. So
well, thank you.
People,
go ahead.
I just was going to say, I do want people to kind of, I would love to hear any comments on anything that we've said. So if you go to my website, which is just deborahcloyd.com, so deborahcloyd.com, it's very easy there to leave comments for me and messages. Hopefully I will be posting this so people can listen to it and contribute and continue the dialogue, as we say, and learn more.
And people are always welcome to visit me at my blog, for example. The easiest way to find it is just to Google my name, Clifford Johnson, and blog, and you'll probably find it. The name of the blog is Asymptotia, ASYMPTOTIA.com. But just Google it and you'll find it. And I don't know, I might do a post on this chat, and so you can go into the comments on that post and put your thoughts or further questions. And maybe if you put questions for Deborah there by accident instead of at her site, I'll ask her to go onto my blog and answer them if she wants to. So, yeah, we can continue chatting. And, Deborah, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this, and I wish you luck. And again, congratulate you on trying to bring science discussion back into the rest of the culture.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.